the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Martin Page.
How you doing, Mike?
Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hello, Mike.
And across the table, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Second show in a row.
Oh, shush.
Next to him, we've got Andrew Sheps.
Hi, Mike.
And next to him, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
And our special guest today is pretty much every guest we've ever had on the Audio Nowcast. Guys!
Hi, Mike.
This is our one-year anniversary podcast for everybody but Bobby. This is show number 7.
I can't count that high.
But we enjoyed his evil twin before that.
That's right. That's true. I'll tell you what, it made it easy, though, when we had guests, because we always had a place to put them. Yeah. I'm sitting Bobby's seat. Bobby,
oh, I'm leaving.
It's not the same with that. Okay, well, this is show number 28, and before we get into the show, I've got a very special announcement to make.
You're pregnant?
Not again.
No, no. This is going to be a long show.
Yes, you are. Changing his name. That's why you're so happy.
That's why he's going like that.
Nope. The important announcement is there's been somebody here who's actually made it to every single podcast.
That's true. Mike. No.
No.
No? No. 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 That person is Rob Arbiter. Yay!
Hi, Drew. Hooray for me.
Absolutely.
And so, Rob.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of this.
We are going to present you
with
the Audio Nowcast Man of the Year Award.
Yeah. Wow.
That's heavy.
It's got bowling champ written on it.
Rubbed off.
It's hard to find plastic like that.
That's it. Can you hear it?
So
thank you.
Yeah, and you know, Rob's been a really important part to the Audio Nowcast because it really was Rob that kind of helped inspire the whole podcast. I worked with Rob on Stevie Wonder and
on his tours, you mean?
That's right.
we weren't actually working on him. Well, he was pretty much established.
We helped him out a little.
We helped him a little. Yeah.
There you go. No, but. I would see Rob every year at the NAMM show, and we'd have some really great conversations when we'd go out to dinner with various friends and things like that. And so I thought, man, that'd be a really good podcast to sit around and talk about audio for the two people that listen to the show. And sure enough, he was the first guy that I asked, and he's been to every single one. And so, yes. Rob the Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Hooray for me. Hooray for me.
So I want to talk about, guys, this last year in audio. I want to do a really quick retrospective of what's happened. And I want to start with you, Rob. In this past year, in just your whole audio experience, is there anything that sticks out, like either a purchase or a way of working or anything that's changed that you would say would be like a big thing that happened to you this year?
I think for me, I mean, it's something we talked about a few podcasts ago, was when I ordered the Icon console, the DigiDesign D-Control console, which I'm still learning how to use. I'm starting to feel pretty comfortable on it, but that has definitely revolutionized the way that we mix. And I used to be one of the people who used to kid around that it's just a big mouse and keyboard. Then I would kid around that it's actually a giant mouse pad because you could use another mouse on top of it. But the truth is, when you have a giant control surface, it changes the way you think about the software that you're mixing. And we still do mix inside the box, but you mix very differently when you have dedicated knobs and faders for everything. You tend to be more experimental and just try things you might not try if you had to do it all with a mouse. And it's quicker to be able to grab faders, which is something Scott used to tell me for years and years and years when I used to say, oh, no, we can do it with a mouse. But the truth is, when you actually have the hardware control, it does step up your game a little bit.
Let me ask you, why don't you describe your your board, because that thing is just massive when I was down there.
It's just massive.
It's 70 feet long.
Don't go there, Bobby.
Yeah. I mean, the way I have it configured is it has 48 faders, and we generally mix on 32 of them and then use the other 16 for group masters. And basically the way the icon works, you can easily set up groups like all of your drums, all your guitars, all your keyboards, and then have a master just for that group. But with the press of one button, that master can spill out onto the rest of your faders. So if you want to adjust the drums, you can grab the drum fader and just adjust that group master. But if you want control over the individual drums, you hit one button, your drums spill out onto the rest of your faders, and then you have individual control of the drums. And so that way, you can be working on a mix that's hundreds of tracks wide, but it's easy to keep it pretty well organized.
And it
definitely has changed the way we work.
Yeah, and it does Vegas mode like no other.
Oh, yeah, it blinks. It has bells and whistles. I got the Vegas demonstration
a couple of minutes ago. That's
pretty crazy.
Just for that.
Vegas demonstration after the podcast downstairs.
And the rest of the year is a blur, by the way, so that's the only thing that sticks out.
Martin, this past year, you've had some pretty interesting things that have happened to you. I know with your impending release of the album, is there any moment in this whole process that stands out to you?
I think it's the same thing that Rob was saying, really, because I'd always worked in the analog world, and with your help, I changed my studio around into a Pro Tools setup, and everything basically changed in the way I would be able to work, in the sense that at first I rebelled and thought that it would definitely be more complicated and harder, but I found it to be overall just mind expanding. You know, I still miss analog sound. I don't think, you know, we've beaten that with digital. There's still something about the analog sound which I love, the gluing of the sounds. But for me, the biggest change was being able to bring up some old masters from the past, put them onto Pro Tools, and then do another 90 tracks, which a lot of my new record is about. You know, I was able to keep on being creative without being held back. So, you know, this year to me has just been moving into the digital domain, but still trying to keep my finger on the analog as well, because, you know, it's still a very special sound to me.
I should also mention one thing, because there is no way realize how important the analog thing is unless you've actually compared the analog and the digital. And one of the things I've done, in addition to getting the new console, which really is a big remote control, is to step up the analog front end to it, because a control surface is a great thing, but it doesn't take the place of great input to your system. And so along with updating the console, we did add some analog stuff, because just what you said, there's no way... There's still no way to replicate that in digital. It's getting close, but it's still...
Another thing I want to add is that really the biggest change in the whole year has been this podcast.
I thought he was going to say his underpants.
No, it's changed my life.
Well, thanks.
Are the audience still there?
Oh, don't worry. We'll get to them.
Ambient mic. Good.
I can always add ambience, too. Scott, do you have the sound effect? Interesting crowd. Interesting crowd.
We're recording this, so I need Walla.
Oh, there we go.
They know what that is. It's great.
Andrew.
Yeah, that's an educated audience.
This past year. Wow.
Well, I bought a console, too, but it's 35 years old, and it's not digital.
That was
my big change, is I bought an Eve console and made my studio kind of back to the future, incredibly old, with
Good
a lot
man.
Of old stuff to go with it. And it's been great.
Where did your Neve come from?
It came from a producer, and before that, I don't really know. I mean, you can find out, because I've got the serial number, you can get the whole history of the board, but I don't think it's got any, you know, it's not like, oh, yeah, this is the one they made this album on. There's nothing like that about it, but it's still nice.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Bobby, this past year, besides showing up to 6 podcasts.
Well, 7, this one. There's margaritas in this one. That's it. If you have margaritas every podcast, I'd come. Right?
We do.
I see. That's it, and that's why.
He started drinking before the podcast.
Didn't quite make it.
Yeah, I just get drunk and don't bother rocking up. Audio this year for me really is just to record more live. You know, obviously we're all stuck in digital, which is advantageous. I do a lot of MIDI stuff as well, and I end up gravitating towards grabbing MIDI equipment sometimes more than I should do. So other than a little bit of acoustic treatment to my recording area, I've just basically recording much more live. Literally, you know, if I need a drum loop, instead of just diving into a library, which we all have, I end up either trying to bash it out myself or get somebody in to record it, and it's a million times better, and it's amazing how quick it is to say to a drummer, just play something different here, or guitar player, change that lick there, instead of trying to reprogram it and work out what to play. It's excellent. So just like a re-realization of, for me, you know, because I do, you know, music for television mostly, so I unfortunately don't do analog recordings anymore, but just realized for me, oh man, live is life. It really is, and we mustn't forget it. We mustn't keep going to this recycled stuff all the time.
Didn't you just, a couple months ago, you recorded your own loop set, right?
I did, yeah. I'm actually in the middle of doing it. Finishing off doing a custom loop library for myself. It's just a multi-track library of three drummers, really, over 5 days recording.
Are you going to keep it multi-track? Is that how it's going to
be
organized?
Exactly. It's actually recycled multi-track in Nuendo. So I have 22 tracks, really. And I can just basically make my own loop up on the fly, or I have a bunch of submixes of it or stems of it, or just gurgitate it if I want to do like a, you know, a filtered screwed up version of it, which is kind of nice.
Yeah,
I'm just about to start a string version of a string library for myself.
Really, like phrases and different keys and things like that?
Phrases, some of it will be phrases. Some of it will be phrases put together in Kontakt that basically a mate of mine that we're doing scripts for that basically makes it very nice, just very good for TV people that can't, they're not working on budgeted stuff for string orchestras or orchestras, so you can get the most out of it. But for me, recording live again, just extra, you know, just press and record on for live players.
That's great. Scott?
I got three things. The first, and I think the biggest thing for me, is being able to take location recording devices that can go 24-bit 96. And it's something in the past, we were using a lot of DAT machines, and you have to take it and in real-time transfer it and then go edit it. Well, now it's almost the equivalent of a digital camera, where I can now go out with 8 tracks at a time, 24 tracks at a time, and with all the latest microphones, record things, put it in the Pro Tools all in the same day, have it named, because we name it on location, and have fidelity that we've never had before. So whether I'm recording NASCARs or Bengal Tigers or just exotic locations. Also, there's these there's a little device that I'm looking at right now by Nagra. It's a little...
Viagra, did you say?
Viagra.
It's a little thing he was looking at.
No, it depends. It's a before and after.
Yeah. Hey,
that's what you call an edit.
Yes. Cook yourself.
No.
Viagra.
It's all going live, guys, so...
Anyway. Sorry. It's about this big. It's about the size of an iPod. Records a 24-bit.
What are you talking? Okay, you're talking about recording that.
Yeah. That's about this big. And there's two of them. And it's got microphones built into it. But what's great is I could use it anywhere.
On location, you
mean? Yeah, just the system's getting better. I can just whip it out and just in it. But no, the big thing is you want to be able to capture anything anywhere.
I bet.
Apparently, we've got it.
What's the third thing?
What's the first one? The other two things basically are virtual instruments, which, as a sound designer, having access to like all of the old vintage synths, even though they're not maybe quite as good, I still can create amazing things at a very fast pace. And I know this sounds strange. Pro Tools, 192 tracks, finally works. Before, it kind of worked, it kind of crashed, put too many plugins in, it'd lock up, and there's a certain stability and consistency within the equipment we're using these days that allows me to take more chances, expand it. I just got finished doing something called Gears of War.
Oh, yeah. It's a great game.
And we did a mix on it, and I had 192 tracks slamming, 3 altiverbs. It was like plug-in central, outboard gear, everything. The whole room was basically going to the hilt, and it worked. There was no workarounds and crashes. And so.
And you
so
think you, that, that's... Sorry. Do you think it's down to... You're running a Macintosh now, right? Is it a new hardware you think?
No,
well?
You know, it's not. I'm actually being upgraded in the next couple of weeks to a MacTel.
Okay.
Which is like the terror to me because now we've got to redo all the plugins. We've got to redo everything. Hopefully it works. Hopefully it's stable.
So it'd be interesting for people to know what hardware you're using, Macintosh-wise.
I'm using a G5 dual 2-gig processor.
Oh, that's great.
It's not even a dual core.
That's amazing.
I'm using a 192 with 2888s on the... as well, and a lot of the part of the 192 and the other 888 24s
right.
are being used for all my outboard gear. So okay. everything goes in it. Pro Tools goes straight out of Pro Tools into my speakers via the Control 24. There's no mixer. I want the least amount of gain, multiple gain structures as possible. I want to hear exactly how it goes. And it's been translating great.
That's great.
You know.
That's great. And you're running 24 and 48?
I'm using 24, 48. Well, actually, yes, 24, 48. But when I record, I'm actually recording at nine, you know, my sounds.
Yeah.
I do 24, 96, convert it down. And I've done tests where I've compared 48 straight or 96 converted. And 96 is so far superior, even at 48, than if you recorded at 48 direct.
Hmm. Interesting.
You know.
What about you, Mike? What's good for you this year?
I think the biggest change for myself in audio, other than not wanting to work all the time like I've been doing for the last couple of months, is I buy all my music now on iTunes, and that was a really big jump for myself.
Instead of pirating, you mean?
That's right. Yeah, this iPod thing, I think it's going to stick around for a while. But really, because I thought I'd really miss, if you listen to some of the first podcasts, you know, I was the guy that was holding out for the record store and going into the Virgin and going into the Tower and looking at all the covers and seeing all the different music that was out there. And I thought I would miss that a lot, with iTunes. And I found with iTunes, it's like being in the world's largest, music store. And you can listen to the songs that you want, you can look up, like, you know.
So you drop songs. More money on iTunes than you would at a record store? Well, like this, not like this, not like this.
Yeah,
99 probably. Cents.
But you know what? The one thing that you can do on iTunes is you can satisfy that craving for that song you might want to hear. Because in the old days, if you're like, man, I want to hear that song again, and then you go, you buy the album or the CD, and you put that song in, and you're thinking, you know, it wasn't as good as I thought it was. But now in iTunes, you can go in there and you could click on, you know, the preview of it, and you get 30 seconds of it. Okay, that's enough.
Do you find that you're buying separate tracks or albums?
Have I
you
find a little bit of both. Sometimes, it all depends on what kind of, you know, mood you're in. I find buying the albums is really convenient. You know, they download really fast, and they sound really good. You know,
do you make a backup of your music?
I make a backup of music.
So if the hard drive crashes, you're not screwed.
Yeah, it's really easy to do. You can just copy the files, and you can also play it on more than one computer too.
And then, do you then take it and play it on your hi-fi or your home stereo system?
My hi-fi is the iPod.
Don't you feel a little? I do anyway. I feel a little not. I feel like, okay, I'm buying a track from iTunes, and of course I use it as well. I love it too, but I still think, oh, I'm downloading this. Oh, it's MP3. And I listen to it and go, oh, it does sound good, but I just can't, I still don't get the Jones that I used to with getting a new record or a new CD and taking it home and listening to it and listening to from a production point of view and a sonic point
of
view.
Well, definitely from
I don't
a
get
sonic
that satisfaction.
From a, like, if I want to go to school on an album, I'll go buy the CD still, you know. I did a project for Fall Out Boy. I designed their concert. I did sound design on their concert opening, and I couldn't use the iTunes that I downloaded. I had to actually go out and buy the CD, and it was far superior sounding. You know, and I still
it was. You thought so? You found that out?
Oh yeah, and you can when you want to really study an album, I find it really helpful to go out and buy the CD too. But it's just getting harder to find places to buy CDs. And CDs are still, at some places, are ridiculously expensive, you know, $18, $20, and you can buy the album.
Go to Amoeba next door, across the street. I mean, around the block.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Yeah.
But parking is a pain in the butt.
That's
there.
True.
All right, well, it looks like we all had some you know, a lot of changes this past year. I was thinking about some things that I wanted to bring up, and from some of the guests that we've had, and some of the different topics that we got into this past year. And, you know, we did a great show with Rich and marketing, and then Gary in the back. We did another great show talking about what's going to save basically the music industry. And I want to open this up, and I want to open this up to everybody out there. How do you guys feel about what I would call the hominidization?
The harmonizers.
What do you think of harmonizers?
So you call it that. What would the rest of us call it?
The
homogenization.
There you go. Thank you, Andrew. Homogenization of music with, like, with American Idol and with all the emphasis on personality over substance, you know? I just want to open it up to, do you think this is going to help the music industry? Is it gonna spur creativity? Do you think there's musical heroes that we can look up to, like we did with like the Pink Floyds and the Beatles? Do you think they're around right now, or do you think it's getting kind of bland?
Don't you think though the '80s was filled with bands that had hairdos that had a vibe?
Every generation gets the businessman's fabrication of an artist, and I mean, that's just the ongoing thing. This is sort of related. The other night on VH1, they had Classics Evening, and they had Roy Thomas Baker that was interviewing him, and they did a whole special on Queen and the Night of the Opera. Mm-hmm. And I love that album, and I like Queen, and I watched it, and I was bummed. I was actually sad. I thought, you know, that's a shame, because this is not going to it's just not really out there anymore. It's just that kind of, at least I'm missing it, certainly. I don't really see people valuing that kind of creativity and putting that much soul and love in and writing great stuff, and, you know, just having a real good team of artistry coming out of something. It doesn't happen.
It's so much today just about a single. You know, there could be a song where you know nothing about the artist. You might not even know who the artist is, but you heard it on, you know, MySpace or YouTube,
right,
or wherever.
Right, game or something, yeah.
And it totally hits you. You love it as a single song, but you're not really even that interested in what else have they done. You just like that one song.
Right.
You know, it's hard. You can have a smash hit of one song, and then no one feels invested in your career to find out what else you've done.
Yeah.
That's just the mindset right now.
Let me open it up to Rich, because I want to, Rich, you're over there nodding your head. I mean, what do you think about the state of music and the, say it, Andrew?
Homogenization.
There you go.
Thank you. That's my gig.
There you go.
It's like having a syllable. Paying for the big words.
Of the music industry right now, do you think there are those heroes out there for people in 20 years that are going to be playing? You know,
I think that they are, but I think that they're in much, much smaller segmented pockets than they were at one time. I mean, we don't live in an era anymore where music drives the culture. And I think that's part of what Bobby was saying about, you know, because I saw that special on Queen too, and that whole level of creativity. I mean, they had, you know, beyond the creativity, they had such imagination. And I think, you know, we all miss that. But, you know, we live in a different world today. In that world, FM radio basically drove a lot of the awareness that we had of music, or, you know, radio of any kind growing up, whether it was in England or here. And I think that today, radio is not the tool that most of us get our music from.
Let me take a quick poll. How many people here listen to music on radio or listen to music on the MP3 players? Radio people, raise your hand. Okay. MP3 people, raise your hand. Yeah, it's getting...
This
it's
is
getting
an old crowd, isn't it?
Anybody couldn't hear the question.
It's getting... It's getting pretty close, though.
But,
you know?
I would love to see what the demographics are, though, with American Idol, because a lot of the mom and pops and adults go, "Oh, they're so clean cut. They sing well. They're good." And the kids are in their bedroom on MySpace, looking at some guy doing guitar riffs and other bands that may not be directly. So you do have to look at the demographics, because a lot of times, I enjoyed the Beatles, but I was also listening to Yes, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Rush, bands which I know a lot of people didn't like because they weren't mainstream, Pink Floyd, which at the time wasn't even as popular. There was more, you know, drug-induced, and a lot of the populace was listening to much more pop music, and Pink Floyd wasn't pop. you know, or Zappa, or, you know.
You know what, though? If you watch American Idol now, whenever they have to choose songs to sing, all the classic songs they're singing are from the 60s or 70s, for the most part, because that's when the industry was really pushing for great songs. And, you know, it's not that there aren't great songwriters still around and that people couldn't be writing great songs, but it's not what the push has been for. It's more about a hit that's a hit because of production or because of the look of the artist or whatever it's about. But it's not about let's create a catalog of great melodies the way it used to be. And all you have to do is watch American Idol, because if there were great songs from the 90s or since 2000 to choose from, that's what they'd be gravitating towards. But they're still going back to classic, you know, Marvin Gaye and Stevie and all the bands you mentioned from back then. I mean, that's when there were a lot of great writers because the focus in the industry was on finding great songs. And so the industry now still wants to find great songs on a show like American Idol, but they're still finding them in the 70s.
Gary, all the way in the back, if you want to hand him.
Ooh, this will be a good test of the wireless.
That's right. Gary, do you think there's the musical heroes around nowadays? Do you think they're going to be, you know, in 20 years you're going to see, you know, people that are admired like Pink Floyd is nowadays?
No.
What do you really think?
Thank you, Gary.
Well, I have a question. You know, you look at a band like Pink Floyd or Progressive, where do you put Nine Inch Nails in comparison to that? Because that is of another generation.
Oh, that's true. That's
something edgy. And you got John Mayer, which is doing jazz, is doing some really interesting stuff. You got Nine Inch Nails. You got some of the more heavy metal punk bands that are pushing those boundaries that may not be stuff that I might not be listening to, but still out there.
I think all that's true, but I really have to reiterate what Rob said. I think that when you look at the songs that will stay with us, you know, go, you know, what will be here 30 years from now? I mean, it's still, I swear, they'll still
Britney.
Be doing the Doors. They ain't going to be doing Britney songs. Okay, they're not going to be doing 99.99% of what we're hearing. Won't be regurgitated and be hits 30 years from now. So I really think that that is the truth. There was a focus on production quality, on songwriting, on songs, not just manufactured stars. And that's just where we are now. Now, whether that flips, yes, it's going to have to come back to great songs. It's going to come back. It will have to. We can't live in this world forever.
But and some of the people you mentioned, like John Mayer, has the potential for creating those songs now that people want to cover in 30 years.
But don't you also think, though, that it's not only the music and the melody, but it's people having a feeling that they need to say something? And it's something like, you look at some of the great 60s music, and there was always a message that people were angry, they had something to say, they had something to talk about.
If this was the 60s now, if we had the 60s artists now, surely there'd be people singing about the war and the world going
well, yeah, but
you know,
I think
the problems in the world
the
now.
Thing, the difference is how fractured the music business is now. Because there are bands. System of a Down is one of the most political bands out there. Rage Against the Machine was and now will be again.
Right.
There are a lot of bands that are very political and are saying things. But instead of there being four outlets for music in your town, there are 50 million because it's on the internet. So within every genre, there are great albums, but nobody outside that genre will ever even hear
them.
Well,
Andrew also is saying something
you don't
very,
have to find them.
Very correct, which is he says he's saying the word bands every time. Which means it used to be a collective group of five or six people who worked together. Now it really seems to be more of a talent, a specific talent. You know, it's not that pool. I mean, I'm sure it exists, and of course that's the case, but I think it seems to be more than the exception than the rule now.
I agree with Rich in the fact that there are going to be the heroes out there, and they're going to be in a smaller segment, because if you look at what's happening like in the electronica scene, you know, and you've got people like BT and you got, you know, bands like Hybrid that are going to, they're going to stick around because people are going to study that kind of stuff. And even, you know, even your Studio Voodoo stuff, Gary, I think that's going to be a great album for people wanting to do, 5.1 audio and they're going to study that. And so
don't you think technology is partly, I mean, not partly to blame, but it's one of the reasons, because now with, you know, obviously with all the digital recording processes we have, all of us, you know, the six of us here could go and be a band, but except I'll do the drums at home and then you do the vocal at your place and we'll never get together.
Well, absolutely.
And it doesn't really ever get that push and pull kind of...
That'd be a really unattractive band.
Hey, the ideal for radio.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's true.
No, it's definitely driven by technology. I mean, I think technology has been a double-edged sword on this whole thing. I think we've had technology that's empowered, you know, the little guys to be out there and creating their own music. And yet at the same time, it's also really made a lot of music bland. I mean,
well, we've talked about that a lot on the podcast, how easy it is to make music these days. And it doesn't mean that everybody who technically can make music should. But you know, it doesn't get you talent.
But you know what I also see is that, and I'm seeing it in TV, movies, and music. It used to be you had three stations of TV. Liked it, didn't like it, you watched it, it was a way to pass time. Now what's happened is we're in the buffet of entertainment. There are so many choices within music, within TV, all the films, whether you can download shows. So what's happening now, it's all being diluted. So what happens is I think the perception is that, oh, my God, it's going to hell. Because a lot of it is it's hard to control because it's not only three stations. It's 500 stations, and nobody's going to get the market share that they used to get within one piece. I also think when you look at American Idol, to me, that is saccharine sugar sold to. It's the old style of saying, I know a vehicle that I can sell these people to a mass market. Meanwhile, right now, I think the music business is trying to figure out how to publicize anybody because there's so many outlets. There's no one big crowd that always tunes in than American Idol.
Well, there's also no cross-pollination unless you get lucky because, as you say, when there were three stations, you would watch a show you didn't like or you thought you didn't like it, but you would be exposed to it because there was nothing else you were going to do. And it's the same with the music where That's you would point. Hear everything. And it still happens in some, like in England, Radio 1's playlist is still all over the map. But now, with XM radio, you specialize which type of dub you like. You know, you pick the channel that has exactly the kind of music you like and nothing else, and that's all you're going to hear.
But isn't that great for the listener?
It is great for the listener in that you can always find something you know you're going to like. But I think in terms of just exposing people to music, it's bad. And it's not just music. It's everything. I mean, I've been working in a studio that's almost an hour's drive from my house for the last couple of months. I'm in the car a lot, and I decided a couple of days, well, let me flip through AM radio. And I used to listen to some talk radio every once in a while because it was – and it's good entertainment in the car. And now you realize nobody ever calls in to disagree. They all call in and go, yeah, and those other guys. And then you flip to the station run by the other guys, and they're like, yeah, you're right, but those other guys. And nobody –
You were listening
to
Rush, weren't you?
Yeah, exactly. There's just there's very little cross-pollination between either musical styles and genres or mindsets or anything because you can always find something you know you're going to want to see or listen to.
But I think the opportunity – you know, it's interesting. I went to Berklee College of Music. And there's a guy named Makoto Ozone, there's Terry Lynn Carrington. There's amazing musicians who did amazing music. And if they were lucky enough to fall into a record label and go through the popular music and make it through that, Ozzy Mottley, which is now becoming popular, who's been around forever. Now I think it's wonderful that there's so many alternative outlets that I don't have to hear or that I want to hear alternative music or bands that I would never have access to. In the past, I think that while the music industry is still trying to figure out how to market itself, that the ability to hear alternative music now is greater than it's ever been in the history of music.
Rich, you were going to...
No, I was going to make a thing to what he is what's being said here, because I think it's a very, very profound point in that it has changed the entire nature in our culture of what is mainstream.
That's true.
The whole definition of what is mainstream in music, in movies, and in television has been radically transformed. In 1990, the three networks in this country dominated the market share of 91%. They had 91% of the market. Last year, in the same study, the five networks that exist now with Fox and CW, they have 31%. And here's the most interesting part of that. It's not that they have 31%. It's that everyone below them, the CNNs, the A&Es, no one is dominant. It's right along your theory of what you're saying about the buffet of channels the amount of information that's out there, and technology and choice and the internet and all of these things have it dilutes what was so-called mainstream. You're right, we did only have three choices, and we would watch everything based on that's all that was available to us. That's the world that, you know, if you're over a certain age, if you're over like 40-something, that's the world you grew up in.
But we seem to be much more safe now. Everybody's too, I mean, all the networks and all the people presenting, like the CNNs and the cables, they're all so safe. They're all watching everybody, and nobody's scared. Everybody's too scared to put their neck out to try something.
Well, actually, though, I take you know what? I actually disagree with that.
Okay.
Because what happens is
take it outside.
Like the three.
You look brown, I like Paigey.
The three networks. And you see, it's reality show heaven. When you look at it, it's worldwide wrestling on one channel, reality show on another channel. It, to be honest, as a film and TV guy, for my taste, most of it's crap. There's 1 to 2 hours a night that might be worth watching. You look at HBO, you look at Oz, you look at Rome, you look at Deadwood. Oz, you got male rape, you got frontal nudity of males.
What channel is this? Let me write this down.
I mean, you know, but it's great. I mean, you've got amazing quality, and what happens? Showtime's doing it. TNT is starting to do it. Now, it may not be a huge demographic compared to American Idol, but at the same point, for those people who want something a little more sophisticated, a little more heady, something a little more interesting, now finally there's a channel that gives me something that has good writing, good acting, something equivalent of a great song. There's the most, I'm such an HBO junkie on every level that they have high quality. It's better than the movies I do. A lot of shows. So I think that it's still out there, but you got to work harder for it.
Yeah, and I just want to address one of the issues you're talking about internet radio and satellite radio. Something that has come up since my when I was on the show last.
Right.
That's Gary, by the way,
yeah,
everybody.
Yeah, that's Gary. last time. The CRB, which is the Copyright Royalty Board, oversees the sound recording royalties for the internet.
Right.
And they've increased internet radio rates between 300 and 1,200%. And basically, the internet radio royalties were already double what satellite was already.
Right.
So, you know, you get this internet radio like Live 365, it's really going to bankrupt them, and it's going to put them out of business. And what that means is that these options go away. So what I'm saying is go to savenetradio.org, that's S-A-V-E-N-E-T radio.org, and talk to your congressman. Talk, you know, be active, because if we don't do something, it's going to go away.
No, that, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring up that topic in and of itself, is the fact that, you know, there's an assault on a lot of these little independent outlets for music, and it seems like the big boys are trying to hold on to whatever they can by you know, increasing the fees and things of that nature. And it's really, you know, it's really going to squash a lot of creativity that's out there in the industry. Let's change topics for a little bit. And let's talk about the state of the audio industry as it is right now. And it's kind of along the lines of what we were talking about. But what do you think of where audio is right now, gear-wise, technology, songwriting? I personally think it's actually a really exciting time to be an artist because of a lot of the stuff that we were talking about.
Hang on, Mike. You got to say, are you enjoying it?
It sounds like so many people.
It's two people just multi-tracked over and over.
And that's the way we do it these days. I got no problem with that.
By the way, that was Brett Johns that walked in late. Everybody said hi to Brett.
Hey, Brett!
Brett was on one of our earlier podcasts.
That's right.
So, but I just wanted to get your opinion on the state of the audio industry, and we'll start with you, you Rob. What do you think?
That's a stupid question, Mike. I don't know how to answer it. No, okay, wait. Let's do that over. Get that again. I can do better. Composure. I think it's something we've talked about on the podcast before, that the gear keeps getting better and cheaper. Computers are getting faster and cheaper. The recording process, or, you know, it's easier and cheaper than it ever was. On a laptop computer, you basically have all the horsepower you need to do a very sophisticated multi-track project. I think all of that makes it much easier to make music, and then the responsibility is on real artists to figure out what they want to make music about. But I think the industry has just consistently been making it easier and easier and more accessible. And I think as time goes on, that's going to make people who didn't have any access, who wouldn't have had any access to the recording process 20 or 30 years ago, who had something amazing to say but just didn't have the money to say it.
Right.
I think we're going to be hearing from people who still don't have a lot of money but have something amazing to say. And we talked about on the podcast before how in the 60s and 70s, if you wanted to get something recorded, you needed a lot of money.
Right.
Because there was no way to do it at home for cheap. You needed big tape machines and big mixing consoles and people with some real education on how to use them to get something to sound good. And that's all gone away. It's much easier now.
Hey, Martin, from a songwriting point of view...
That's a stupid question. I don't want to answer.
Yeah, he's leaving.
No.
Actually, it was a good question. It was asked badly. He asked it all wrong.
See, so, now everybody can see the abuse that I edit out.
Not likely.
But from a songwriting point of view, what do you... You just finished the ASCAP convention that you were at.
Yeah.
Songwriters, in a good spot? Technology helping them get their craft? Technology diluting their craft?
No, I think what Rob said is it's a wonderful time if the technology's in the creative hands. You know, there's an opportunity for a lot more people to express themselves. And at the expo, there were thousands of people, thousands of writers. I mean, it was a really great turnout. So you know that it's healthy and everybody still wants to create. The only thing I've, you know, come into this table as purely as a songwriter is I think I really have to study on what I want to use, cut a lot out of the picture. There's so much to choose from, so much technology that you can just spend your time learning the equipment. And it's really important for me to know that the equipment's there to use quickly, and which the digital world has made possible. But you really have to sit down still and say, I need to get to the guitar. I still need to get to the piano. I still need to put up a good microphone to sing a tune. So for me, it's a dangerous time. You know, it's a creative time, but a dangerous time because there's so many options. And you can just fill your head up with loads of choices. So it's real important to still read the books, still see great art. Still listen for great motivation in art, because technology is a little scary at the moment. There's so much to choose from. And as a writer, I have to basically funnel myself down to a few choices. And those choices, I think, that most creative people have to concentrate more on now. In the old days, you know, you basically said, here's my guitar, here's a group of guys I'm working with. And it all happened in a very close, unified place, and something unique happened in that way. Now that there are so many choices for the individual, as Bobby was saying, a lot of stuff just spreads out and gets watered down. And if I'm still trying to write a strong song, I have to make my first decisions are not to complicate things.
Right.
And so for me, it's a double-edged sword. You know, I love the creativity, but my first 3 days of writing a song is how to write the song with one instrument and not, you know, thousands of sequences and, you know. So to me, it's great, but you have to look at it like it's also very dangerous.
Well, one thing I've noticed about, especially with your songwriting, is you trust your gear now. Because there was a time where you
sure.
were first getting with Pro Tools,
yeah.
and you'd call me every other day and say, it's doing this and it's doing that. And,
yeah.
and now it seems like... And you were really
he's just not
unsure about
you anymore. He's
just, yeah, now he's calling you.
He's got his 24 track back out.
No, but now you trust. It's like you trust your gear, yeah. and I think that really would enable a songwriter to.
No, I trust the gear. I just think it's really, you know, really a very confused time. You know, I've come through a lot of the different eras for my age, so I've seen, you know, the different technologies from analog to DAT and now to hard disk. But I still find myself that the biggest thing I have to do if I still want to write songs and still touch people is I have to put technology second.
Absolutely.
It has to be second, you know, and, you know, I feel very lucky to be here with guys that know more about technology than I do, but I know my job is to look at technology second. I need to first come with the a great attitude and create creativity and a great, maybe a great idea. And technology in some art forms is based around that. But for me personally, if I'm trying to communicate a human message, the technology has to be looked at well down the line.
I think a question is, if would you like to hear a really well recorded song, an average song, or would you like to hear a really crappy recorded great song? And you know, would you want to listen to something like that? You know what I'm saying? For right. me, I personally would say, oh, let me hear the good song. I don't care. It's in mono. It's fine. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Mono?
Really? I'm just saying. Compared to technology, because a great song or great writing transforms whatever it's. It doesn't matter. It's just a hammer. It's just a tool.
I mean, what I get from this whole talk even is that we have so many options. Yeah. There's so many choices. I mean, you're sat in front of us here, Mike. People can't see this, but you've got your laptop in front of you. You know what I mean? And it's just like this. It's moved at such a pace. That all we're talking about is choices, 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 choices. And I think the skill is, at this time, while there's a digital revolution still going on, is it's going to come down to the choices you make with what's around you, because it's moving at such a pace.
You know, it's an interesting little experiment, exactly what Paige is saying. Obviously, we all have studios and we all have to do stuff. But what I've done for myself, and it's really a nice challenge for guys that like, you know, have instruments or whatever, is I say, I'm only going to use two things. I'm not going to use anything else. Yeah. I put on one computer. I don't put on the rack. And I just do it. And it's amazing when you start tweaking with your old synth or your old box, and you start getting there and you actually program something that's more unique, and you really make it work. And some of the funky records that you hear from you know, whatever time ago, they only have a couple of things going on, but they've done it in a unique way, and they've actually used their creativity with a limited source, and that's resource, and that, I think it's a good experiment. It's a good exercise, rather, for these days.
You know, I actually want to counterpoint this for a second.
Go on, then.
Seems to be your job.
I know, you're going to be a counterpoint guy.
Yeah. Point to counterpoint. No, you know, I know. I think that we've created the Day of the Porta Studio, which is right now as good as a record studio. And it's amazing, but one of the things that incredibly saddens me is I think that pro audio is dying. And what I mean by this is, you look at the TCs, the Lexicons, the Eventides, it's like they're all making stomp boxes now. Everyone's talking about buying old gear because it sounded great. Where's the new gear? Where's the new technology? Where's the new stuff? What's happening? I keep hearing it's a Pro Tools paradigm. You can't get into it. You're locked out. Sorry, Pro Tools. But it is. I mean, right now they're kind of the Microsoft of audio. And if you don't play ball with them, you don't exist. And a lot of manufacturers are having hard times. Where's the new TC6000? Where's the new Eventide that's nothing like the 8000, but that's light years ahead? Lexicon's got a table over at Harman Kardon or where.
Yeah, Harman.
Harman. It's ridiculous. Pro audio, every time I talk to people, they go, why don't you do this with Digi? Can't do it. Not a license. Won't work with it. Digi's controlling plugins. For the people that live in the DigiDesign paradigm, which is a lot of us, the manufacturers are being stifled about what could be created in a bigger pro audio. I want to see morphing. I want to see things that I've never done. My job as a special effects guy, to be honest, is all about the technology.
Sure.
It's about manipulating and mangling and making things that I've never heard before. Right now, we're all going back to the old stuff. We're going back to Neves, you know.
But you know what? I think you're correct in the sense that the sense of pro audio is going, but I think it's just shifting, because there's still manufacturers that make gear that, you know, 10 years ago would have been considered high-end pro gear, and now it's just affordable and it's great stuff. And a good example is, you know, Marvin Caesar, who's here from Aphex, in like the 230s. I mean, what a great little unit that this thing is.
I think Aphex stuff is amazing, but the reality, when we're speaking with Marvin, he's competing against the plugins. And a lot of times it's a reality that's happening. I think what's great is, if Apple or Nuendo steps up to the next step,
Steinberg, yeah,
and it basically creates significant competition with DigiDesign. Like right now, if you don't want an icon, it's working with that. Now, Euphonics is coming out with a whole new paradigm to work with Apple. All of a sudden, if they can break the monopoly that DigiDesign has, it'll help DigiDesign.
Marvin, I'm sorry, Ken. No, I said Marvin, from a manufacturer's point of view, what's the state of the industry right now?
pretty poor. Scott was saying, it's a Pro Tools world. People like the convenience. They love the convenience of plugins. And Rob and I had a very interesting session about a week and a half ago where he, of course, is a plug-in kind of guy, but as he said, he's interested in more and more analog stuff to enhance his studio. And we actually played with an old product of ours, the Dominator, compared it to what he had in a plug-in, and he was blown away. And to the point where what he said to me, which is an ultimate compliment, that he was rethinking the way he mixes. So it's a matter of getting to that very small population that can still hear and still care. and that's the point.
Haven't died.
Yeah, that's the point. And I know as a manufacturer, I have a limited market, but I still hope that there are still
people. Keep up the analog stuff.
Yeah, you keep it up on there.
You know what? It's also, it's a matter of education, because there are plenty of really talented young engineers who could hear the difference if they were presented with it.
Absolutely.
The trick is a lot of them aren't ever presented with it.
That's true.
Andrew, why don't you...
The good ones will actually seek it, though. I mean, the ones, the mad scientist engineers, which they should be, that's hopefully they'll...
Coming from a mixer, why don't you tell us a little bit?
I think you've got to always look at what the end product is, and at the moment, the high end of the end product is a 44-1 16-bit CD. But I went to a really interesting panel discussion that the NARAS Producers and Engineers Wing put on about digital distribution. So basically, the point of it was, how do you get your music into iTunes and all the digital distributors? And it was a great evening, but one of the questions was, when will we finally get to CD quality downloads as opposed to MP3s? And the answer from all four panel members is never. It's not going to happen. And everyone says, well, but our bandwidth is getting better. But if it takes 10 times as long to download, because that's the average size difference between a full CD file and the MP3, the people think something's broken and they'll go to where they can get it in 10 seconds. So it's, and I find that depressing, I guess, because I'm still putting on vinyl and I love audio fidelity. But that's me. And if I'm making it for myself, well, that's great. But when you want to actually sell your product, you have to look at who you're selling it to. And you're selling it to people who don't... It's not that they're ignorant or... They just don't care. Because what are they listening on? They're listening on headphones, or they're popping it through a little adapter into their car. Very few people spend a lot of time listening on a good system at home. And there will always be the audiophile people at home, and then there will always be a format to keep them happy. Like there are online classical companies where you can get uncompressed CD audio, and then they're also starting to allow you to download the HD CD audio. So there's a tiny, tiny little market for it, but in general, it just doesn't matter.
You know what's amazing? That when CDs came out, the audiophiles all hated it because they said it sounded terrible. Now it's the thing that...
It's the gold standard.
And that, I mean, how many other technologies have been that way where they've started being terrible or considered terrible and then slowly became elevated to the gold standard?
Well, and the room, I mean, you could see, because this is the producers and engineers wing, so it's producers and engineers and people who make records. And everyone was expecting this guy to say, oh, any day now, any day we're going to have high bandwidth downloads and people are going to love it. And all four guys, never. It's not going to happen.
But what about Apple and the fact that you could now download higher quality tracks from EMI and pay 30 cents more, you know, $129 as opposed to $99. I mean, it's a little step.
Well, yeah, everyone on that panel found that interesting, but again, that you're going to charge more, so then you're going to be back up to $20 for the CD. By the time you get to CD quality, it's going to be the same price as it is in the stores, which is what people refuse to pay for it.
Surely technology is going to get to a stage, I mean, there's got to be a better bandwidth ability for us all in the future. I mean, well, obviously the way technology is going.
DSD, they low cord recorder.
Just by the way, I just put in a T1 line, you guys. Just to let you know.
You know who's pushing that envelope is actually film. Because right now, film is actually going away. And what they want to do is live feeds in high def, was it 2 or 4K, basically be able to transmit the film into the theater. They hit play, have total control over it.
Where from? Transmitted from
just
where?
Just central.
A central station.
Well, no, it's going to be based off of dishes. That's so smoking. So basically, it's and it's the standard is 9624. Compressed, not compressed, this is a Dolby thing. And basically, the whole digital cinema, the problem is that they're really close with the technology. The problem they're facing is the theater owners don't have the money to do a whole new projector, to do a whole new high-tech system. So the question now is, do the studios have to go back into what's called the exhibit business, where they actually own theaters that can play these things? But that's really the conundrum right now.
Well, look, it looks like you know, this upcoming year is going to be like what, like Martin said, is going to be. There's still a lot of confusion. There's still a lot of issues that are going to be sorted out. And there's still a lot of things that are, you know, we're going to have to just see how it unfolds. We got to be wrapping it up. But before we go, I just want a real short answer from everybody. A real short answer from everybody.
That's impossible.
No, but I was thinking about this. You know, we're all fortunate to make a living in audio and or songwriter and music. And I just want, really quick, for you to tell the audience out there, what's the one thing you like about what you do? We'll start with you, Rob. I can start, and I'll show you what I mean.
Yeah, let's hear this.
I really like being in audio because, for me, it's a great creative outlet. And I mix post-production, and the fact that I can help take some tracks and put a little bit of my stamp of my creativity, it's a great outlet. And for me, it just keeps me feeling alive and feeling like I'm contributing something.
Brought into tears now.
See how short that was?
Now that's his dress you're talking about.
What I like about what I do.
Getting paid.
Well, yeah, there is. That's one of my favorite parts. Actually, I'm very fortunate to be doing what I do for a living because it's the only thing I'm naturally good at. So I'm really glad that that turned out to be my career. But I tend to have the attention span of a hummingbird sometimes. And I like going from project to project really fast. And I like working on a lot of different kinds of projects. And whether it's music or sound effects or mixing or whatever, I just... The way my career is structured, I get to do a lot of different things, move between a lot of projects. And when I'm within a project, I like focusing very deeply on it. I might get onto something for 2 or 3 days where I just eat, sleep, and breathe just that. And I enjoy that too. So I enjoy being able to move between projects every few days. But while I'm in the project, I like being able to pour my whole self into it.
Martin,
that's a short answer.
That's short for me.
I think for me, it's that we travel with this crowd, these groupies that have been following us for the last year. That's what I find very exciting.
This is our seventh.
Yeah, seventh one we've done, Bobby. Yeah. It's. I mean, you said this answer quickly, and it's just. I feel very lucky that I can. I don't know what the next song's going to be, and that I'm healthy enough to pick up a guitar and try and write a new song. So I just feel very fortunate that, you know, I don't know what the next piece is going to be, and that mystery is something that I love.
Andrew?
I like the sandwiches, mostly. For me, I just, and I'm incredibly lucky to be able to even say this, but when I hear things on the radio, like if I'm driving and someone's got their windows open and something I've worked on is in the car and you see people liking it, that's just ridiculous. That's amazing.
Scott.
When I was 3, I have to admit, I think I'm incredibly lucky. The biggest thing that I love about what I do is I go out and I capture people's lifestyles as an audio photographer and learn about the life of so many different people, take those sounds that I've captured and use it to help tell a story and sit there and be creative all day and occasionally a story that's actually worth telling. And when I get an opportunity to do that, it's just great. I love it.
Bobby?
Just music. I mean, it's just amazing. Very lucky that I can get up in the morning and do music, even a bad day, and it's, you know, doing something I don't particularly, not doing very well at, it's still a great day. And you know, how bad can it be? My job, you know, any of us sitting here, we're very, very lucky, and very grateful. That's it. Just music. Just enjoy doing it.
The last thing that I really like about it is I like the fact that, you know, we can get a bunch of people here, and after a whole year, we can still get together and have, you know, conversation about the industry. And
there's only one black eye at the table.
All right, well, I just...
Thank you, Andrew.
Actually, since I have the worst attendance record here, I suppose it's my turn to say... We should all say thank you very much to Mike for putting this on and being a solid, a solid man.
You're never too kind. Hey, and also,
obviously nobody knows, but it's Cinco de Mayo, and Mike's parents have put on a smoking set of munchies beyond. I mean, to say the least, the food's been excellent. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, guys, thank you for this last year. It's been really great. Before we go, I have to mention that the table that we're sitting at, it was made by KK Audio. We're going to put a picture up on the website. But Steve Widows is here, and he helped push this thing together.
Yeah,
that's a fantastic, fantastic table.
I do have to say, this is by far the most comfortable we've ever been.
Yeah. If you only saw what we...
Actually, a question for Steve. That little divot you have cut out in front of Mike on the table, can it be made bigger? Because he may get bigger.
That's
right.
Exactly. I see.
This is the after.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So you're going to put...
We're going to be looking for a new panel member.
yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, we're going to put pictures up. Actually, we should do before and after so people can, you know, see what we used to sit at and where we're at right now. I also want to thank Marvin Caesar for his support, Aphex's support. You know, we got to give Marvin a big round of applause. He's been a great friend of the show, and you know, he came on when we needed a panel member, and he's just a really nice guy, and they make some fantastic gear, so you want to check it out. Well, I just want to encourage everybody, if you have a question for any of the panel members, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
And don't forget to thank April as well, by the way. She's been sitting there.
April?
She's been
sitting there. That's right, how
can I forget
April?
Slaving away.
I also want to thank April.
Making margaritas.
You're right. April, I'm so sorry. Yes, April Mastropolo, she's our producer, and she's made a ton of phone calls, sends out all kinds of emails, and basically keeps us going. Yeah. So, and she buys healthy snacks. You ever notice that?
That's just one of the things I was going to complain about, really. That's why I've not been coming.
all right. Well, we look for, you know, I'm looking forward to the next year, and Bobby, if you want to grace us with like 8 shows next year, that'd be great.
You see. Yeah.
But,
You keep stopping me from swearing every time I come. That's the trouble. I mean,
we just put him on iChat.
That's right.
Just put him on the computer.
Really quick, anybody got any interesting projects that they can mention right now? Or is it still Rob? That's a still no.
Not that we can mention.
No.
That's a shame.
Andrew?
No. Sandwiches.
Actually, I've got one silly.
Go ahead.
It's nothing glamorous, but it's kind of fun. Right. It's for a library, but they wanted a traditional disco record. But I said, I'll do it only on one count. I can do it live. So I'm going to do live strings, live brass. It's going to be a fill, no loops. It's going to be all live. That's a bit of fun.
That's fun.
Yeah. And Scott, one of your movies just opened?
Yeah, one of my movies just opened against Spider-Man.
Yes!
It'll be... What was that movie? It's called Lucky You. Just came out, and I've got two more movies that I'm working on right now, which I'm excited about, which is called Valle Vila, which is Paul Haggis's film, and The Express, both of these are going to be coming out this winter, and I'm finishing up a shoot 'em up.
Great, Martin.
Well, my album's getting nearer, so I'm about a month and a bit away from it, and. I'm working on a track for a breast cancer charity at the moment, so writing some new stuff and getting there, so very near.
Great.
And it's a great record, you guys should check it out. The luxury of having to listen. No, serious.
It is good.
It's a very good record.
All right, well, guys, from all the guys here at the Audio Nowcast, I want to thank the audience for being here. You guys are great. And putting up with these guys. All right, well, from all of us here, we're going to go party right now, so we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaolo and uses Apex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.